It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Airbnbs seemed to mark the cool people these days. Saying, I'm staying at this gorgeous little Airbnb marks you as an adventurer, someone who strays outside the hotel lines. But how did this industry become so ubiquitous in such a short time? And how is it being regulated and taxed by state governments? Wisconsin came to an agreement with the Airbnb industry about a year ago, and it has made far more money than was predicted. Are other states finding the same thing? And how much are we spending to stay in other people's homes? We're exploring the industry with Andra Gent, an academic director of the James A. Graskamp Center for Real Estate, and the Lauren and Marjorie Tiefenthal Professor in Real Estate and Urban Land Economics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Andra, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me on, Carrie.
I just want to say, when I introduce people who have a lot of titles, I just want to say we are talking to a distinguished guest today. That is what this tells me.
Or I have a lot of administrative responsibility.
Okay, fine. You can look at it that way. I'm going to call you a distinguished guest. So let's talk about this agreement for Wisconsin for taxation. When did this happen?
So I guess it happened, it took force last year, and I guess the projections for revenue, as I understand them, were based on the number of nights in 2016 of Airbnb guests in the state of Wisconsin. And my understanding of what happened is that there was just far more nights stayed than anticipated, which accounted for some of the increase, you know, the unexpected revenue.
So we're talking about, the state was thinking that we would earn $700,000 in taxation in 1 year. We ended up earning $2.5 million, which is more than 3.5 times more than we were expecting. Is the state expecting Airbnb to grow even further?
You know, that's a tough question, Carrie, and I'm not really sure what the state is expecting about Airbnb. You know, even it seems like there must be a higher cost per night as well. I mean, it's a really big increase. You know, I think the state is probably happy. Just keep in mind that this isn't sort of a huge revenue source, I imagine, for the state, in that the background on this that was that hotels, I think, rightly so, felt unfairly treated in that they have to pay occupancy taxes to both the state and, in some cases, municipalities. And the idea of those occupancy taxes is that they go towards supporting tourism efforts at the state level or at the municipality level, right? You probably see, we have various amenities certainly around Madison that make it attractive to tourists, and a lot of those are paid out of state or municipality dollars. And the idea is sort of, well, why, you know, the Airbnb hosts are free riding on the efforts of the state and municipalities. And so this was really intended to level the playing field. Let's give some, you know, they have to pay the same taxes, and then, you know, goes back, hopefully, to support state and municipalities' tourism efforts.
Hopefully.
That said, of course, money is fungible, right? So, you know, it's not a direct, you know, there's no way of saying for sure that that's where the money went. But I think that was the main goal, was to level the playing field.
Do we know that that's where the money goes when you pay the hotel tax?
You know, I think it's hard to ever say that for sure, because, again, money is fungible. And, yeah, you can say it's earmarked. But, you know, all that means is really there's a lower bound on the amount of spending you have to spend on the state. And, of course, it's even hard, you know, anything that makes it attractive for tourists, you know, also makes it attractive for residents, right? And then you attract favor to your town, you have a higher tax base, and, you know, lower unemployment. So it's really difficult to completely disentangle anything you do for tourism from just a benefit to the local community. So I don't know exactly the details of the agreement, whether it was explicitly earmarked in the case of the hotel occupancy taxes, but, you know, earmarks in general you know, money's fungible.
Right, I got it. So we are talking about Airbnbs today. Wisconsin has gotten a windfall, $2.5 million from the first year of taxing Airbnbs. Do you prefer Airbnbs to hotels? Have you ever used an Airbnb to find a long-term rental, or do you use it only for short-term rentals? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org. And we love tweets, WPR Mornings. Andra Gent, before this deal was made last year to collect taxes on homes, Airbnb was often criticized for this unfair advantage. Was this a legitimate concern by the hotel industry? And what did regular people who might be staying at hotels think of this?
Yeah, I think it was a very fair concern from the hotel industry. And I think it was just, you know, remember Airbnb started by a couple of guys, you know, renting out part of their apartment. And then sort of as it evolved, it became clearer that, you know, this was often being used by either vacation or business travelers as an alternative to a hotel. And so I think Airbnb has been fairly good with working with municipalities and states to collect that revenue. Now, of course, as a user, you always want a lower cost, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, nobody likes to pay taxes, but most of us value the services that taxes pay for, right? So that's just part of the deal.
So talk to me about this. When I first heard of Airbnb, my response was, you're staying in somebody's home rather than in a hotel where you have autonomy and you don't have to interact with somebody. But also, I have stayed in bed and breakfasts, which are somebody's home. There are places that you can go and timeshare and share something. So how is Airbnb different than that? And why do people want to stay in somebody's home?
Yeah, so full disclosure, I am both a Airbnb host myself, mm-hmm. not at my place in Madison, but I have a second home that I do rent out on a regular basis. And I'm also have frequently used Airbnb as a guest. What I can tell you is there's a huge variety of levels of service provided at Airbnbs. There's everything from something like a bed and breakfast to what is effectively you're renting an apartment, and it could be for months at a time. Hmm. I've done rentals. My rentals now are all via Airbnb on my secondary residence, but they're at least a month stay. And so it's really more a platform for finding, let's call it medium-term renters. So I think there's a lot of variety. And, yeah, there are some where you're just renting a bed or a bedroom in somebody's home. There are some where you're renting the whole place and you will never interact with the host.
Mm.
So there's a variety of experiences there. Now, relative to hotel, to me as a guest, one of the advantages I like is that it's just more comfortable to have a separate bedroom from the living space, particularly for longer stays. I also like being able to prepare my own food when I'm traveling. And often if I'm going somewhere for a long time, it's just not super comfortable to stay in a hotel, for me at least, if I'm going for more than 3 or 4 nights.
We are talking about Airbnbs and their rapid rise here in Wisconsin and around the world, actually. We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Carol from La Crosse, welcome to the program.
Hi. I was just calling because I'm traveling to Europe in September with some friends, and we are almost exclusively staying in Airbnbs because we found them to be much less expensive than staying in a hotel, and you have the same amenities, and actually it's, you know, almost like being in your own home. It's a little more personable, so... That worked out really well for us, and it made the trip a lot more affordable.
Thank you very much, Carol, and enjoy your trip. I envy you. So I actually have a friend who was based in Turkey for a year and traveled all over Europe and stayed in Airbnbs all over Europe, and she said the same thing. It's a lot cheaper. It's a lot more comfortable. How quickly has this grown, and where is its reach? Andra?
Yeah, so this is a great that's a great question. I don't have the exact numbers on that. But one thing I would point out, particularly in Europe, one of the things you're saving on when you stay in an Airbnb relative to a hotel is the cleaning. So remember, if you're in a hotel, typically they're cleaning it every night.
Mm-hmm.
That's very labor intensive. And especially when you go to these Northern European countries, you know, Scandinavia, certainly, labor costs are super high, right? So a lot of the difference in the price that you're seeing is in part due to not having that daily cleaning fee that's basically embedded in the room rate. And some of the hotels are sort of catching on that that isn't necessarily a service everybody values,
right?
That you do, you know, once a week,
right?
Or, you know, only once a stay is valuable. And some of them are trying to offer, you know, an extra amenity in lieu, you know, if you forego cleaning. You know, they all try to say that they're very environmentally friendly.
But they still have to pay people to clean. We are talking about Airbnbs, how they've grown in Wisconsin and the world, and how the state is benefiting from that growth. We're going to explore regulation in a moment. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. The state of Wisconsin started taxing Airbnbs about a year ago. They thought they would collect about $700,000, and they collected $2.7 million, largely due to the growth of the industry in the state. Have you ever stayed in an Airbnb? Have you hosted? What draws you to it? What are your views on long-term versus short-term rental for users and owners? And what are your views on how a short-term rental property affects the neighborhood? Give us a call. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is the email address. Or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Andrew Gent, we've got a lot of phone calls here. Carla from Sheboygan, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make one comment about how my husband and I use Airbnbs. It's actually become quite a great thing for us. We love to travel, and when we travel domestically in the United States, we now exclusively use Airbnbs because we can filter by properties that will allow pets, and we like to travel with our dog. Hotels a lot of times will accept dogs, but you can't leave them unattended in your room. So if we wanted to travel, say, to Memphis and go to Graceland, we can bring our dog, leave our dog at the Airbnb, and then leave for several hours to go to what do whatever we want to do outside of the Airbnb that we've rented and leave our dog behind. And it's been a great solution for us for traveling with our pets.
That's a really good point, Carla. Thank you so much. So, Andra, dogs and pets, a lot of times the new take on an old idea gives people a little more freedom. Hotels have lots of people staying there. They have to have lots of regulations for lots of people. And Airbnb is one house or one apartment, and you can bring your pet.
Yeah, you know, that's really up to the host, of course. And, you know, just like landlords, it's up to the host whether they permit pets or mm-hmm. not. And obviously you attract.
But you can list that. You can say pets.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of the benefits of Airbnb is it allows a lot of flexibility in what the experience is. You know, what is going to be the lease length? What is going to be the terms? You know, do you have access to the entire home? Is the host expected to leave breakfast items? Or, you know, and now Airbnb has this service where they offer these experiences where it's basically like a tourist guide or of some sort. And so there is an ability, and, you know, they can list, you know, there's pets in the home. You know, I have a friend who rents out her place. She was looking for a cat sitter, and she found Airbnb. She just listed her place with her cat there. so that's another thing. If you're not bringing your pet with you, maybe you can find an Airbnb with a pet.
Wow.
But there is a lot of heterogeneity, and I think that the platform allows for a lot of that flexibility.
So why did you decide to do Airbnb, and what's been your experience?
Yeah, so I'll tell you about both my host and I'll talk about my host experience first, and then I can talk about my experience as a guest. So I live in Wisconsin. I used to live in Arizona. I kept my place in Arizona when I left Wisconsin. I do like to go down to Arizona occasionally during the winter months. And the problem with a long-term, I didn't want to sell my place in Arizona when I moved here, but if you have a long-term renter, you know, a standard kind of one-year lease, then I can't go and use it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the benefit of putting it on Airbnb is I can get renters for a month or 2 months or even 4 or 5 months, but then I can block out certain dates for personal use. And so that's the main reason I chose to use Airbnb rather than either sell the property, do a long-term lease, or vacant. I will tell you that I once left, when I lived in Arizona full-time, I left my property vacant. That is terrible for the property.
Mm-hmm.
There's almost nothing worse you can do for a property than leave it vacant for a long time. So people often have this sense with properties that, you know, it's, oh, I won't get a bad tenant, I'll just leave it vacant for 6 months. It's just terrible.
Don't
do that.
It's a living, breathing thing.
There's a lot of appreciation. Yeah, exactly. You know, most of the guests I have are excellent. I've had one bad guest in 3 years. He did not have any existing reviews on the site. That was a mistake of mine to not do more due diligence when I realized he didn't have reviews on the site. So, but most guests leave it in very, very good condition. Yeah, I've had overall very good experience.
So, what was the bad experience? I gotta go for this. Why? What did the guy one guy do?
So I think he just left it. He really, I don't know what his expectation was. And it was actually a guy with a family. You'd be surprised. But people with young kids are kind of hard on properties.
Yeah.
Not always the guys who are like in their mid-20s that come. It's sometimes the people with young kids. And he has young kids, his parents there. And they just, you know, I don't want to go into everything they did. And none of it was irreversible, but he moved all the furniture to suit him. He took everything out of the cupboards. He's like, you know, there was a fork he left in the toaster. I mean, it was just like a bunch of random things. You're like, how do you live this way?
Right.
But it is, you know, I will tell you that unless there's a significant piece of damage to your property that you can mark on Airbnb, it's quite a process to get any reimbursement from Airbnb. You know, if there was some one thing that you have, you know, he completely ruined my kitchen table, then you could get reimbursed for that. But if you do, I'd be careful about renting to people without reviews on Airbnb. Most of the people who are, you know, the more reviews, the better.
Okay. We are taking your calls about Airbnb, 800-642-1234. Lori from Saner, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. My comment is right along with the review. One of the things I like about Airbnbs is I get to rate the host, and the host gets to rate me. So the next time I'm out looking at an Airbnb, that host can check my record and see whether she wants or he wants to rent to me or not. And that I like.
Thank you very much, Lori. So, yeah, you were just talking about make sure you check the reviews and don't rent to somebody who doesn't have one. But what if somebody is just starting out and hasn't had any reviews?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a good question. And, you know, it's one thing, I can tell you I've rented to somebody who, you know, was another professor on sabbatical that didn't have previous reviews. Mm-hmm. So then it's an up and get a little bit of a sense. And then I would say it's very similar to what you would do if you were renting in a traditional setting where you sort of do a little bit of due diligence. As opposed to going from the reviews. But the reviews often also create an incentive for good behavior on mm-hmm. both the part of the host and the guests. And so I think that's a real check. I would be careful. You know, the other thing I would say about hosting reviews, so I'll tell you about my one bad experience as a guest. This guy, we went to Honolulu, and he owned this place exclusively to rent it out, which is fine. Well, there are some issues with that, but I won't get into those issues right now. But this, when we got there, it was a terrible place, and we were just not going to stay there. It was just not in good condition. And the tip-off to me should have been that he'd had a lot of canceled reservations. And what had happened is often they will cancel the reservation. The way Airbnb might resolve a conflict is by canceling the reservation. So then in that case, if you don't stay the night, the guest does not get to review the host. Because I would have given this guy a terrible rating.
Ah.
So I'd just be mindful about if you see on a host site a bunch of terrible reviews, but most likely if it was a dispute, there might not even be a review. So if you see canceled reservations, I would say that's a red flag.
Good idea. Let's talk about regulation of Airbnb. Wisconsin finally, I mean, this has been happening for about a decade, and it was only about a year ago that Wisconsin said, hey, you got to pay taxes here. Are Airbnbs regulated in terms of paying taxes for what presumably would be tourist fund, but are they regulated also by the state in the same ways that hotels or other rental properties are?
Yeah, so I'm not 100% sure, other than the taxation issue, regarding what rules the hotels have to abide by. You know, that's a good question. One difference, I think the other big regulatory issue, and it's not as big of an issue in the state of Wisconsin as it is in places like San Francisco and New York City, is that there are people who are buying properties and exclusively buying properties that are basically zoned as residential. So you go and you buy a condo and you rent it out on a sort of primarily hotel stay-like basis. Mm-hmm. And the concern regulators have, or that people are starting to think about, is, well, is this sort of circumventing zoning regulations, right? So we zone properties specifically either for commercial or residential use, and this property's been zoned residential, but then you're effectively turning it into a
hotel,
right? So the concern from, I think some of this has been spurred a little bit through the back door by hotels, but I think there is a legitimate concern that this is driving up rental rates because you're taking some of the housing stock out of service, effectively, right? So what we don't know at this point is how much of that is going on. I don't think it's going on very much at all, if anything, in the state of Wisconsin. But there's certainly some sense that it's going on in some of these higher-cost rental markets like San Francisco and New York City. That said, so San Francisco, as some of you may have followed, has put very, very onerous regulations on Airbnb. They've made it very difficult. In my view, the first order problem with affordability in the Bay Area is not Airbnb. The first order problem is they won't build any housing stock. Hmm. And so it's a little bit of a sort of red herring to distract public attention from what is a much bigger problem.
So I have reported on this in Las Vegas, where people would rent homes and then throw parties. And residents didn't particularly like having parties next door to them in a residential neighborhood, where they didn't, and in neighborhoods where there was a lot of, you had to actually approve somebody having a party, and people would just rent Airbnbs and do that. So, and we also have somebody who wants to talk about that. Susan from Madison, welcome to the program. Susan,
hello.
You there? Yes, welcome to the program.
Hello. I have a question or issue that I'd like to discuss with your host or guest, and that is about an Airbnb in an established neighborhood in Madison, old neighborhood. Someone bought the house, turned it into an Airbnb. We didn't know about it, not that we need to know about it. However, my concern was that this person is having people come in who we don't know, bring 1 to 4 cars when these guests come, and it bothers me that I don't know what this business is, what's going on, and who these people are.
Thank you, Susan. So, Andra, the person who rents the Airbnb knows that there's a rating for the guests and can choose that. The neighbors don't necessarily know. Like I said, sometimes they'll have parties. She brought up the car issue, neighborhood regulations that people don't don't know about. How do you deal with that?
Yes, I don't think there's any easy solution to that. You know, it's always an issue with, you know, neighbors and potential renters, is you can't control, you know, in any time your neighbor rents out their property, you can't control who they're going to rent it to. And any attempts to do so, you know, to the extent you restrict people's property rights, you reduce the value, right? So if I knew ex ante I could never rent my home out, I would be very hesitant to buy a home, that particular home, if there were strong restrictions on rental, and therefore the price would go down. So it's definitely a concern. I think it's a more general issue about how you manage neighborhoods. And, you know, I think some people do just feel uncomfortable not knowing who their neighbors are. I think that's something that if you're in an HOA, so most condo buildings have an HOA, of course, right. And some neighborhood as well, or neighborhood association, you regulate it. And the onus has to be on the host, right? So what you have, the only way you can manage it is manage the host. And so you have to penalize the host if there's any sort of violation of a noise code. You know, whether you just feel uncomfortable with not knowing who's there, I don't know how you deal with that. But, you know, unfortunately, we just live in society, and you have to tolerate that your neighbors are going to sometimes rent out their properties unless you have a restriction in either the neighborhood association agreement or the HOA that says there are absolutely no rentals, but that's going to reduce property values.
We are talking about Airbnbs and their value to the state of Wisconsin and to the people using them and renting them out. Andra Gent is joining us. She is an expert on real estate and specifically Airbnbs. She owns and she also rents them when she goes places. We're taking your calls here, 800-642-1234. Kara from Madison, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment about traveling with children, especially, I guess, multiple children. We have four teenagers, and we recently went out of the country last year. And we specifically look for Airbnbs that have washers and dryers. It just saves so much money without having to rent two rooms at a hotel. We can prepare our own food, and we can pack less, as far as like having to pay for luggage costs and whatnot. So it's really, really super convenient for large families. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kara. We are taking your calls here for Airbnbs, 800-642-1234. Andra, I want to ask you, are there many neighborhood associations in Wisconsin?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I don't have a good answer to that.
Okay.
I think there are in Madison. My sense is, yeah, I can't answer that for sure, but I think that's the way any sort of, you'd have to regulate any sort of renter, whether it be via Airbnb or whether via a traditional platform, there has to be some sanction on the landlord. That's the way you have to deal with it, because obviously you can't deal with the you can't deal with it on the tenant level.
And we also have had instances in which people of color have rented Airbnbs and then had the police called on them by neighbors who don't recognize those people and think that they're breaking in. So there's a little bit of that that goes on, too. Are you aware of that when you rent to people? Do you kind of warn people?
You know, so I've never rented a place in Wisconsin, to be clear. I've rented a place
in Arizona.
Arizona, I don't think, you know, Wisconsin just being this very, particularly around Madison, being a overwhelmingly white place, maybe it's a bigger issue in Wisconsin than in Arizona. I think that's an issue with the police. I don't think that's an issue with I mean, that's a really unfortunate thing to have happen. And, you know, that's just a terrible experience for somebody to have to go through. But I don't know how you would warn a potential guest of that. Say, you know, I can't even imagine that conversation.
Is it possible that an owner of an Airbnb can simply let the neighborhood know, hey, I have an Airbnb. People are going to be coming and going. Is that out of bounds in some way?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, I would think certainly I would think that's acceptable. And, part of being a good neighbor would be probably talking to your neighbors next door, certainly your nearby neighbors, and saying, hey, here's what's going on. I'm using my home as an Airbnb. I think the bigger issue people are having is these professional Airbnb landlords, where they're basically, that person is not a resident.
Mm.
They're not even a part-year resident. They're exclusively buying it for investment purposes, and then you're getting tenants. But again, even if you're getting, some people just don't like having tenants in their building, period.
We are talking about the explosive growth of Airbnbs in Wisconsin and around the world, how much states are collecting from this industry. We'll be back in a moment. It's It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Airbnb has seen explosive growth in Wisconsin and all over the world. What is the appeal? What makes it different than the old vacation rental or timeshare? What makes it different from hotels? What's the most interesting Airbnb you've ever stayed at? And what are your concerns with the industry? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We are talking to Andra Gent. She's an associate professor for real estate and urban land economics at UW-Madison. Andra, we've got Bob, who is calling from Arbor Vitae. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning, Andra. I appreciate the topic. I think it's a topic that we need to drill down into more, because I think that you take a look at where people are conducting their business with Airbnbs and VRBO rentals, and I think it's important to, as you've mentioned earlier in this broadcast, that we keep in mind the neighborhood situation. I have a couple of rentals, one in Florida, one in Wisconsin. And the one thing that I've done is I've restricted my rentals to just people that are renting monthly, partly because I think that the level of client that I get when I rent monthly is better. They tend to take care of the property more. And the other comment that I have, and I would love to hear your remarks on this, is just recently, I believe it was last fall, the Walker administration changed the zoning laws in Wisconsin. Are you familiar with that, Andra?
Are you familiar with that?
I am not exactly. Well, so how did they? So usually zoning laws are set at the municipality level. So I believe there was some discussion about preventing municipalities from certain types of zoning. I think there was some discussion about preventing municipalities from banning Airbnb themselves. Is that what you're referring to?
I am, and it's not that they are okay. Banning them. It's that what happened was, if you own property in a area that is zoned R1 residential, which is zoned for single-family homes, what's happened now is previously R1 residential, one was not allowed to rent for less than 30 days. Now, if I'm not mistaken, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, I don't think I am, that the Walker administration has changed that zoning now so that those people who own R1 residential and who bought purposely so that they were in a neighborhood that was not going to be rented for less than 30 days, now they can rent for 7 days or less. And it really changes. It really changes the dynamic. I see.
So what R1? So if I understand correctly, they've redefined what R1 is.
That is, I guess, as good an explanation as any. I think that's right, Andra. And for instance, my sense of it is, because I own property on a lake in northern Wisconsin, is that now there are those who rent. New at this. I don't think they know how to vet their guests. And so what's happening is...
Okay, Bob just went away, but my guess is he was going to finish that sentence by saying what's happening is people are coming through the neighborhoods and people don't know who they are. Maybe the places are trashed. What do you say about what Bob talked about changing the law?
Yeah, so I think that's it's an interesting change, and I think that, you know, Door County, I don't know if he's speaking specifically about Door County, but Door County has, you know, there's a large number of homes that are almost exclusively vacation rentals, and they're just not there might not just be a huge set of people that would live year-round in these homes. So I want to distinguish a little bit between the platform and short-term renters, because we've always had neighborhoods, you know, that are predominantly short-term rentals, right?
Right,
it's just that Airbnb sort of facilitates the exchange a little bit better, right? We've had, my guess is that Door County had large portions that were renters on lakes that were vacation homes long before we had Airbnb.
Right.
So this is not necessarily new. And of course, renters do not take care of the property the way that owners do, and especially, you know, short-term renters that are coming for a week, maybe from Chicago, they don't have an investment in the community in the way that a resident does. So I think that that's a problem that is not specific to Airbnb. The other thing I would point out is that Airbnb, the platform, also allows for longer-term rentals. There is nothing on Airbnb that prevents you from doing a one-year rental term, right? So to me, this seems like a huge efficiency gain and even finding long-term renters. So I think it's important to distinguish between technology and sort of the overall effect of short-term renters. That said, maybe the existence of the technology makes that matching process more efficient, which allows for more short-term rentals.
And I think also people look to it as a short-term rental. Most people don't say, hey, I'm moving to Phoenix. I'm going to find a long-term rental through Airbnb. They look to find a house. So they look, you know, they look to find in more traditional ways and look to go to on vacation with Airbnb.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly how the company developed. But they, you know, originally as it was, you know, it was renting out very short-term stays, usually in somebody's home with that person there. But the company now has a number of arrangements for payment. They have evolved to have the capacity to do long-term rentals, and I think they do it more efficiently than, you know, a traditional, I don't know where I would go. Maybe you go to Craigslist or something like that. When I've moved to places or you look sort of at the major rental buildings in the area, now, obviously, if you're moving and you want to buy a home, that's a completely different thing. But it certainly has the capacity to facilitate the longer-term leases.
We are taking your calls on Airbnb, 800-642-1234. Gary from Brookfield, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carrie, and good morning to you and good morning to your guest. I think your guest is absolutely incorrect when she says establishing a commercial business, which is what an Airbnb is when it's renting out absentee owner the facility on a daily basis next to my residential property. That takes the value of my residential property down. It doesn't take it up. And that's one of the reasons why you have zoning laws, to prevent that.
Right.
So I believe she is incorrect.
Okay, so I think that you actually said that, Andra, that there are issues when you have absentee owners and the neighbors don't know them, and they're essentially running a business in a residential neighborhood.
Yeah, so I want to distinguish between two things. One is the effect on the individual property owners, the actual person who owns the property and maybe renting it out. The fact that you're restricting their usage rights in some way can affect their property value, okay? Just because if I can't do certain things with my property, it's less valuable.
But if the person next door to me is renting an Airbnb, that might affect my property value.
So that's the externality in an overall neighborhood, right? So and that's why we have zoning laws. The caller is absolutely right. That's why we have zoning laws. That's 100% correct. And so the question is, you know, how do zoning laws sort of adapt? And it sounds like the state has decided we are going to adapt zoning laws such that R1 now means you're allowed a rental of 7 days or more instead of at least 30 days.
Do hosts have to, I know this is different for each municipality, but do you have to pay in Arizona a fee for everything you rent? For every time you rent?
So it is collected automatically every time there's a renter. And again, it is being effectively treated, the way the state and the municipality are treating it is effectively like a hotel. So it's not being taxed like a rental property. It's being taxed like a hotel. And in fact, that's higher than you would pay on a longer-term rental typically.
With regulations like R1, you can't rent to somebody overnight. You can't rent to seven people in a week.
Exactly.
You have to rent it for
the guest. Exactly. The caller is saying, what if his neighbor is doing that? Then it would seem to me that is in violation of zoning codes. And the way to address that is to deal with your individual municipality to enforce the zoning code.
We have a lot of calls here. Tricia from Brookfield, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So what is your question?
My question, I have a couple of comments. Number one, when there was talk about Airbnb collecting taxes, they collect the state sales tax, They do not collect local room taxes unless there's a separate agreement with the municipality. So they only do some of them. And in addition, as far as the municipality's rights, the municipality does still have a right to ban nightly rentals up to 7 days. After that, then they cannot do the ban. That was what was in the law that changed back in the fall. And another thing is that hasn't been discussed to my knowledge is the fact that they are not necessarily licensed by the state. So you've got a public safety issue to kind of keep in mind. If they were to be licensed, collect and remit taxes, so they're safe, they're in the right area, they're following all the laws, it's a great opportunity for an alternative accommodation.
Okay, so Tricia, I just want to note that I have a note here that you work for the Wisconsin Hotel and Lodging Association. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So that's where you have your numbers from. So she brings up a good point, Andra, they're not, Airbnbs are not necessarily licensed in the same ways as hotels, and they're not necessarily taxed quite in the same ways as hotels.
Yeah, so that's a very fair question, and that's really good information. Thanks so much for calling in. You know, how the state deals with them, if I were a state legislator, I would say anything under 30 days, you also charge the occupancy tax, because that is very similar to a hotel. I would say stays of less than 30 days, that looks like a hotel substitute to me. And I would say you regulate it like a hotel. I don't know about the licensing. I'm sort of suspicious of licensing requirements in general, because I think that consumers can make the decision for themselves when they see reviews, I'm a little bit hesitant to take away that individual choice by requiring the same licensing as a hotel. I'm not sure I would support hotel licensing either, but I think it's certainly fair to ask that, maybe Airbnb hosts are not paying enough, and maybe we do need to ask Airbnb to collect, in addition to state sales tax, they need to be collecting occupancy taxes if the presumed use, and I think the only way
short
you could regulate that is based on the number of days stay,
right,
is similar to a hotel.
Thank you for that, Tricia. Thank you to Andra Gent. She is an academic professor, academic director of the James A. Graskamp Center for Real Estate. She owns a B&B, Airbnb, and she rents from them. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me on the show, Carrie.
I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.